Dear Moore, can you review again why an affair is bad for you, even if you enjoy it? Can you explain how affairs normally end on their own? Now my husband says he is mourning the other woman, although he knows it is not good. He says that if the affair would have ended on his own, it would have been better, but now it was forced to end, so how can he move past his feelings? Background: my husband of 22 years has just told me he has resumed his affair with the same woman he had a child with, and now she is pregnant again. He says he wants to make our marriage work, but he's still attracted to the other woman who is the mother of children. Help. Okay, so this is a big question. I mean, it's a big set of circumstances. I'm going to have to be brief with each piece of your question, but I am going to do you a big favor, and I'm going to try to address each piece of the question, even though I'm going to be brief. So first, can I review again why an affair is bad for you, even if you enjoy it? Sure, you say review again. I don't know I've actually ever discussed why an affair is bad for you. I think I have assumed all these years that it's pretty obvious why an affair is bad, but I can discuss it briefly. Look, you're saying even if you enjoy it, the fact that you enjoy it, I don't know how relevant that is. Most of us enjoy chocolate cake. Some people enjoy doing drugs. Some people enjoy watching endless television. Some people enjoy hitting their children. The fact that we enjoy it is completely irrelevant, has no correlation, really, to whether or not it's good for us. I mean, there are things that are simply not good for us. You know what many of them are: not sleeping, not exercising, smoking, hitting your kids. I mean, these are just simply, you know, they're bad things, and they have obvious consequences. Now, most of those examples I just gave, I have to go through them in my mind, I think all of them, were examples of consequences of our actions in the physical world. But just as there are laws in the physical world with natural consequences to them, so too there are laws in the spiritual and emotional world with also natural consequences to them. And although the consequences are not always as linear, in other words, the cause and effect is not always as obvious, if you're astute and you watch closely and you look at enough lives, you can see very clearly the correlation. And adultery is one of those things. It's actually one of the easiest ones, I think, to see. It's one of those things that, you know, for thousands of years has been understood and known to be unhealthy spiritually and emotionally and from a relationship point of view. And the consequences on our lives, on our relationships, on our parenting are also obvious. It doesn't matter if it feels good. Just because it feels good doesn't mean it is good. Now, why is that the case? I mean, you might be asking that also. Why is it the case that adultery is wrong? Why is it the case that adultery is unhealthy? Why is it the case that adultery causes negative things to occur in people's lives? That I can't answer. Just like I can't answer why it's the case that when you jump off a 20-story building, you land, splat, and die. I don't know why. That's just the way it is. From a theological point of view, we could say that's simply the way God created the universe. Those are some of the laws of the universe. So too with adultery. I don't know why that's the case. It just is. And okay. You also can explain how affairs normally end on their own. So first, just the data. Affairs normally end on their own. The statistics are overwhelming. Despite what people are feeling when they're in an affair, despite the compelling justification that people come up with in order to justify and rationalize their affair, despite the fact that they often feel like they've never felt before, like they've met their soulmate. I mean, so too, when people first do drugs, I understand they feel like they've never felt before. But it doesn't mean it's good, and it doesn't mean it's going to last. So despite the fact that there's this compelling justification, these strong feelings, the fact of the matter is that they die. The vast majority of affairs die. They just don't last. Now, I can offer you, and I think this is what you're asking, I'll have to do this very briefly, but I can offer you some explanations, some. I'm not going to give you a complete list, but I'll give you some of the explanations as to why I think affairs die. The first I've really already explained, which is that it's wrong. It's just simply wrong. And when you participate in something that is in conflict with the natural laws of the universe, when you do something that's wrong, sure, for a short period of time, you might get some pleasure from it. You might be deceived and think that it's good or healthy. But ultimately, the laws of the universe govern. In other words, we get to make choices. We have free choice. But we don't get to choose the consequences of those choices. The choice is ours. The consequence of those choices is a function of those natural laws, and it will play out regardless of our choice. So that's the first and the most important reason why they fail. It's just because it's, you know, just like you can't you can't stand there and flap your arms and fly away. Why can't you? Because the aerodynamics are just such that it doesn't work. So too, the relationship dynamics in an affair, just long-term, just don't work. Secondly, because they're based in deceit, there's so much deceit surrounding the affair. The fact of the matter is the adulterers cannot ever really trust each other. They can't. There's just not, trust is foundational in a marriage, in a relationship. And when the beginning, the origin of the relationship has deceit and lack of trust all embedded in it, ultimately the relationship is doomed. How would they ever dream that what they are doing to their spouses, they're not going to do one day to each other? They couldn't possibly trust that. So that's the second reason. Third is that it takes a pretty significant character flaw for somebody to commit adultery. I mean, it's reflective. It's often, as you've heard me discuss, it's often reflective of dynamics going on in the marriage. I mean, as you've heard me say, affairs don't lead to broken marriages. Broken marriages lead to affairs. So it's true. The environment in the marriage is what leaves a person vulnerable to having an affair. In other words, affairs don't happen in a vacuum. That's true, and you've heard me talk about that. But here's the point I'm trying to bring out. Although that's true, nonetheless, an adulterer, somebody who has an affair, does have some significant character flaws. The fact that they have entered into an inappropriate relationship of this magnitude is reflective of some significant character flaws and problems within them. Now, the adulterous partner, the mistress, let's say, for example, if she's married, you've got the same thing. Even if she's not married, so she's single, she's not committing adultery, but she's choosing to participate in an adulterous relationship. She's willing to have a relationship with a married man. So either way, whether one of the adulterous partners is committing adultery or both of them are committing adultery, you have two people together in the same relationship that have some real issues. I mean, that have some serious character flaws. And character does not discriminate. Even though they're feeling in love now and thinking that everything is fine between them, the fact that they are such significantly flawed people will end up biting them in the very relationship that they're currently enjoying. Relationships succeed or fail, sure, it's partly because of the dynamic between the people, But one of the reasons why I spend so much time in this program touching on character development and personal transformation and personal development is because relationships can only be as strong as the people that are in those relationships. So it's an interesting thing going on when you're trying to succeed in a marriage, even when you're trying to heal a marriage. Sure, you're working on the relationship dynamics, but you better also be working on yourself, your own character development, because both of those things combine to really form the quality of the marriage. So in an adulterous relationship, you've got people that have real problems, real issues, real character flaws. And you put two people like that together, and the relationship is bound to blow up. You also mentioned that I just want to say that your husband mentioned that the affair would have been better had it ended on its own. But now it was forced to end, so he's having trouble moving past his feelings. I just want to comment that he's right. I just had this discussion with a gentleman today. You want to be careful not to try to interfere with an affair, and I don't want to get too deep into it. There's lots of reasons for that. But the one that relates to this woman's email is that, you know, the affair will end. It doesn't need your help. And when an affair runs its natural course and ends, it's much easier for the people that were involved in the affair to see their wrong, to experience remorse, and to move forward in their life and in their marriage. But when the betrayed spouse tries to orchestrate or manipulate the end of the relationship, then from the adulterer's perspective, it ends prematurely. It feels unfinished. It feels incomplete. And there's this ongoing yearning. And it is problematic. And I know it sounds funny to say, but in some ways it really is better if the affair continues until it runs its natural course. Now, there was no advice there because there's really not, I'm not suggesting your husband should go back and continue the affair so that it runs its natural course. Okay, it's over, but there is kind of an extra hurdle there in the healing. He is going to have to get past some lingering feelings, and it's going to be a little bit more difficult for him to do that. So I just wanted to point out that that he does have an interesting point. Lastly, and I'm going to be brief here because we spent a lot of time on this question, and also because these last circumstances you pointed out probably don't relate to too many people's situation, but you mentioned that his mistress is pregnant. That, of course, is an incredibly challenging situation. Now, let's just assume for discussion purposes, and it seems like a safe assumption in your case, although I'm well aware that it's not always the case, and that is that you and your husband, despite the fact that the mistress is pregnant, want to reconcile your marriage and be together. That takes a tremendous amount of strength and courage. I really commend you for that, and it's really quite an amazing commitment that you're demonstrating. Anyway, these are unique circumstances, and it does call for some unique advice. Very briefly, here's how you need to handle this. It's not simple. Normally, in the case of an infidelity, post-infidelity 101 is that the adulterer has to sever the relationship with the Mr. or mistress completely. No phone, no text, no email, no visits, nothing, zero, zip, goose egg. The betrayed has to feel safe that this person is out of their life. That's crucial. Here, that's not possible. Because your husband is the father, or going to be the father, of this child, and the mother of the child is his ex-mistress. He's going to have some sort of relationship with her. She's going to be in your life, assuming that this child is going to be in your husband's life, which I think he has to be, this child has to be. He has a very compelling fatherly responsibility to have a relationship with this child. How could he have a relationship with a child without having some sort of relationship with the mother of the child? So the key here, and I have worked on cases like this and helped people carve a lifestyle, a path, to both have the child in their life and and reconcile the marriage. And the key is as follows, a couple of points for you. Number one, you have to view that child as your own. You have to be willing to accept and love that child and almost play kind of a motherly role when that child is with you and your family and your husband. And you have to see that child like he's your own, like kind of like a blended family, as if it was the child of your husband from a previous marriage. The child can't be something that's important in your husband's life and nothing to do in your life. That won't work for the marriage. Secondly is, you, the betrayed, are much better off managing the relationship between your family and the ex-mistress. The other alternative, of course, is that your husband is kind of the point person, but that creates the obvious problems and challenges. The marriage will be much better off. You'll feel much safer if you're the point person in that relationship. When there have to be, you know, drop-offs or phone calls or plans made or emails or whatever, you conduct that relationship. And your husband should keep as much of a distance as possible. Again, there's going to have to be some contact, but as much as possible.